What's up, everyone?
I still feel the rush.
Yeah. All right, that's enough. We are not so live on Real Estate. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on when you listen. We got myself, Paul Apostolakis. We've got Sal Cusmano. Got a haircut. Looks good.
Thank you.
We got a new guest, Diane, one of our top loan officers. Does a lot of good work. And we have a very special guest, Lindsay Broadwell.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
How are you?
I'm good.
Lindsay is a realtor
At
Remax. I have that written down.
Yep.
You've been in the industry a little over 2 years.
Yes.
Correct. And you were a previous soccer star.
So David says, yes, yeah. I am.
David takes, just so everybody knows, David just went around the whole office and took complete credit for getting Lindsay into the world of real estate and mortgages and that whole thing. I think he has nothing to do with it. I don't think he did anything for it, but he does take credit for your success, which is nice.
He was my first boss out of college, so he did teach me a lot.
How'd that go? I'm surprised. How long did you work with him?
For about 3 years.
You lasted 3 years?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a big deal, guys. If you guys don't know what it's like working for David, it's been 6 years for me, and I'm like on the verge of a nervous breakdown. So today we've got some really good topics. We're going to talk a little bit about Century 21. They just named the former Zillow exec, Nick Bailey, as their CEO. Just kind of wondering what that means for the industry. Obviously, Century 21 is a pretty big company. Real estate firms right now in New York are starting to do virtual reality tours, meaning that, you know, for their New York apartments, meaning you don't even have to go look at something. So what does that mean for the industry? And also, Fannie Mae has started allowing appraisal waivers on purchase transactions, coinciding along with Freddie Mac. We'll talk about that. Lindsay's going to talk to us a little bit about the market in Waterford and waterfront property. And also, being that she's been in the industry for 2 years, how to kind of get started, how tough it is, how you grind through it, and how to be successful doing it. Because you've had some good success in the last 2 years.
Yeah, some great success and some failures also. So,
well, I think you've got to fail to succeed, right? So
exactly.
let's start with your topics, Lindsay. So talk to me about how you got into the industry, other than David discovering you.
Right. Basically, I was a soccer coach for a long time.
Yeah.
And then also sold Adidas.
All Adidas?
Like all Adidas. So it was a company that sold Adidas to like car dealerships, Dick's Sporting Goods, stuff like
Got
that.
It. Okay.
And then I wanted to become more.
Yeah.
So I left there and had a couple different jobs and tried to find my niche. And then I decided that real estate could be it. So I took the dive in, got started right away in Clawson. And then from there, I found Remax, which has been like the best move I've ever made.
Yeah, they've got a good office there. I see a lot of good social stuff on them, and you guys are doing a good thing, it seems like.
Yeah, we're all really young there too, so that helps also.
Yeah.
Newer in the business, which is phenomenal. And then, I mean, it's just...
So what would you say is the hardest part about getting started in the industry? Like what, I'm sure there's a ton of like things that like are tough. You've got to figure out, you know, how to get your business, how to get your name out there. What was to you like the one or two things that you were like, man, this is way harder than I thought?
Definitely the follow-up.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people think with real estate also that you can just choose your own time to work, which is true, but you really need to start 8 a.m. and do it from 5 p.m. every day and possibly later.
Yeah.
And following up in the morning is definitely key with a lot of leads.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of people get told that and they don't end up doing it.
Right.
And they let leads fall through. That is definitely a big one that I feel that was hard for me to get used to, but is very true.
So. I mean, and I know you work quite a bit with Diane on getting people pre-approved and following up, and Diane does a really good job following up. So when you get a potential prospect today, and how many times would you potentially have to call them just to get them on the phone and like get a hold of them?
Probably about 10 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, 10 times. And then also, which leads in also to Diane, is getting them pre-approved. And that's another thing that I noticed is a lot of people just want to go out and look at houses.
Yeah.
And when I was first in the business, I got really excited for it and took them out to see the houses. Then they find something, and especially in this market, they'd want to put an offer on and not be pre-approved.
Right.
So then
which doesn't
them,
work really all
no,
that well.
No, not at all. So therefore, getting them pre-approved and sending them before you go out to look at houses is huge.
I think there's a common misconception that people think before they enter the industry that they think it's easy,
mm-hmm,
right?
Definitely.
Well, okay, I'll do one home a month, you know, at 300,000, I'll close 3.6 million a year, right?
Right?
You do the math, you're like, wow, it's a great living. But I don't think they realize what it would take to close one deal per month at 300,000 average amount. You know what I mean? It's like,
it's hard.
There's thousands of calls that go behind that, even, yes. Right? And if you want to do more than that, it's a full-time job.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Above and beyond that. So it's pretty funny.
Yeah, and going back to the pre-approval process, Diane, you can speak on this, obviously. When you get someone and they want to go look at houses, how hard is it to kind of say, hey, you need to call Diane before we do anything? Because the reality is you don't want to waste your time. You don't want to waste their time, right? So, Diane, when you get that person on the phone, what are the first few things that you ask them?
I dig in deep. If they have put in an offer, I generally will take that information, make sure they qualify for that value. If they haven't looked at houses yet, I will give them an idea of what they qualify for. Generally, I like to turn it around in about an hour pre-approval because a lot of times people come to me and they haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
And they found a house or they're looking at 10 houses and they need to get pre-approved quickly. So we get them done ASAP.
Which is totally backwards, right? You should probably get qualified for a mortgage before looking for houses,
right?
For sure. Well, my wife does this, but like it'd be like you going shopping and not having money and then all of a sudden like trying to get the money for whatever you want to buy.
Absolutely.
Right? It just doesn't make sense. Okay. So tell me a little bit about the market in Waterford. It's an interesting market because it's like pockets of like beautiful waterfront properties and you've got some areas that aren't awesome.
They're selling still really well.
I mean, the values are great in Waterford.
Yeah, they've gone up about 16% over the past year. Values, it's crazy.
It's wild.
And we actually just had a listing that went like in less than 3 days.
Really?
And at like under 200, obviously under the 300 mark goes faster. But this one was at 200. Not really an updated house, but very well maintained and full price offer, no contingencies, everything. So it just, if you're looking to sell in Waterford, it's right now for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny, and Sal, you could talk about this, and Diane, I mean, that's the sweet spot right now, right? Mm-hmm. People are looking for $200,000, $225,000, $250,000 max, and like these are millennials that want to find a good house at a decent price, and you're not going to find it in Royal Oak.
Nope,
you're not going to find it in Clawson. So Waterford's a pretty good area.
The past 7 years, so many people entered the market, you know, in terms of buying a house and getting a mortgage and all of that. So I think that it's a lot of first-time home buyers, right, just due to the whole millennial thing. And then after that, people upgrading from what they just bought and cashing out on their equity to buy a bigger home. So whether they bought a $150,000 home before and now it's $250,000, right, mm-hmm. Well, they got $100,000 to put down on a $400,000 house.
Right.
Everything's moving so quickly, it's just crazy.
Right, which then brings you to the waterfront properties. All those people are looking to get in waterfront properties. And if your waterfront property's priced right, they are going super fast. Especially, I live on a lake, and I mean, every house
lucky
on our
you.
Lake.
I live on a lake.
It is spoiling.
How do you temper expectations for someone who's selling their house on the lake who thinks it's worth $200,000, $300,000 more than what it actually
is?
Yeah.
You just have to tell them the truth and show them. People like to see it in front of you, so I bring the comps and hash out every single thing that their house doesn't have that house went for.
Right.
On the waterfront property. And a lot of, with waterfront properties, lake frontage is huge with helping the price of
How
your
much
home.
Lake frontage do you actually have, right?
Yeah. Right. I thought you were asking me.
I'm not talking about your exquisite lake front. That's awesome.
But, yeah. It's.
Do you find often that like when selling a lakefront property that would require like flood insurance, or is there extra steps you think that, you know, a buyer would have to look out for when looking at a lakefront property, like seawall maintenance, things of that sort? Or
definitely seawalls. Yeah, it depends obviously on where you are on the lake. So you want to look at how well they're maintained, because seawalls is a lot of work. If you have a beach, sometimes you want to look at what way the wind blows, because you'll have a lot of weeds growing up, blowing up to your.
Wow. No, so that's actually a factor, is which way the wind blows.
Yes, definitely.
Wild. So,
you sound like the lakefront expert.
Yeah, it sounds like you know what you're talking about, because I would have never thought the wind's blowing from the east today. And
you just think you have a beach
day.
And everything's all
great.
All
great. And then, I mean, there's people down in our lake that have moved just because of how many weeds have blown up and how.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but now we have a harvester that actually comes and cleans it up for us.
Very nice.
So that's awesome. So that's talking
about,
right?
How do you keep the geese off your lawn?
We actually have somebody that comes and shoos them
away. Sounds like you've got a lot of help. I mean,
no joke.
Yeah.
I don't agree with it per se.
Yeah.
But sometimes they vote on it, okay. And I vote no.
All right.
But they shoo them away, and then another thing, also look at lake associations, what that pays for, because that is what we pay for with the lake association, right. Is the weed harvester, which
got
is
it.
Awesome. So.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's get in some topics here. The one that's really interesting to me right now is Fannie Mae allowing appraisal waivers on purchase transactions. For the audience, an appraisal waiver is basically where, you know, you put everything through the system, you run it through Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. It's almost like getting a credit card. You push a button and it comes back and says if you're approved or not. And there are times where, mostly on refinances in the past, where it would say you don't need to do an appraisal. Well, Freddie Mac just recently came out and said, we're going to start doing that on purchase transactions, where if you have enough money down and the file's strong enough and it's in an area that we believe the value's there, we're not going to ask for an appraisal. Fannie Mae, I mean, they're always going back and forth competing. They're always trying to get a leg up. And Fannie Mae said, we're going to do the same thing. So we potentially might get into a market where, you know, 10% of homes that get bought don't need an appraisal. I don't know the actual percentage, but it doesn't happen that often that you're going to have an appraisal waiver, but it's going to happen. And it's going to happen if you have a lot of money down, good credit. There's a lot of factors go into it. But still, how do you guys feel about doing a purchase transaction without an appraisal? Diane, what do you think about that? I mean, is that dangerous, or are we going into a situation where, you know, potentially that's not good for the buyer?
I don't think it's dangerous. I think it's great. The transaction will go so much quicker. Fannie Mae studies these values in certain areas, and that's why they issue them. It's very well studied. So I personally don't think it's dangerous.
I will play devil's advocate, because I actually think it's a good thing. But Fannie Mae studied a lot in 2008.
True.
Right?
True.
Right? So, I mean, there was a lot of studies on back then. But, like, I worry. My biggest fear is that they are overinflating the values potentially, or
Here's the way I look at it, right?
Okay, Sal.
So, I mean, everyone agrees upon a price for a purchase, right? And
right.
The market's kind of priced that within, hopefully,
very good
you
point.
Know, so, you know, a close range of what the actual market value is. You could have an appraiser come in and appraise at 10 grand low, or you could have an appraiser come in and appraise at 10 grand high. So it's still just an opinion of value.
Yeah.
Whether it's coming from Fannie Mae, an appraiser, I think the market, you know, will bear if someone's willing to pay that, right? And they're putting 20% down and they have good credit, it's relatively low risk. Now, if they were giving appraisal waivers away on FHA loans or 1% down loans, okay, we could be in a, you know,
yeah.
a little predicament
yeah.
of coming
yeah.
in underwater right off
For
the bat.
Sure.
But
I definitely agree with that. I mean, we actually just encountered that whole situation in downtown Northville where appraisal came in so low, and it's like this appraiser just, I mean,
It just wasn't a good appraisal.
And I was trying to, and I told them where we should have been at, and they agreed with me, not the appraiser, my clients.
Right.
And we actually got it to $5,000 right at that value.
You did. But it causes a lot of headaches, right?
Yeah, the appraisal is just, I mean, a lot of times it comes in at value because that's what, like Saul said, that's what the market, you listed at that value, that's what it should come at.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just get screwed.
It's a really weird thing. It's a really weird thing because in the world of capitalism and commerce, right, something is worth what somebody's willing to pay for it, right?
Right.
So, but in homes, it's very, very arbitrary. So basically, appraisers look backwards, right? So in a rising value market, it's difficult sometimes to get the value that you're looking for because they're looking at all the past sales maybe 6 months ago. And 6 months ago, in this market, you might have gained $10,000 in equity within 6 months. It just, in my opinion, and I do like this on some level, but again, I'm playing devil's advocate because it is a weird thing that you could buy a house with no appraisal, right? Mm-hmm. But look, appraisals are tough right now. I mean, I see low appraisals happening all the time because there's bidding wars on houses. It's going over ask. But if I'm willing to pay what I want to pay for the house, why wouldn't it just, why would I care?
I think the tough part about appraising and, you know, in our business, it's sometimes hard to have a soft spot for the appraiser because they're the ones who usually, like, if anything will go wrong in a deal, it's the appraisal, right?
Right.
But they only have data from past sales. And, you know, as a real estate agent, you're looking forward or at the current market. But we all have to remember that you know, at least in this business, you can only really use what has been sold. So it's tough.
Devil's advocate.
For sure.
Devil's advocate. they are controlling the overinflation of values on some level, right? Yeah, there is some good to it, because if left to our own devices in the market, values might start overinflating very quickly.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's like a hot air balloon. Everyone's like breathing into it so quickly.
You're full of hot air.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul. Love you. But I think Diane's right. You know, they've studied these areas where they're giving out these appraisal waivers, and I think that it's a good thing if exercised. But to be honest, if I was buying a home, you know,
if my agent
was like, it's kind of a long shot, you know, that we're going to get this value. So if we have this appraisal waiver,
could get the price
might
down
just
lower.
Get the deal done, right?
Right.
But
right.
Ultimately, like, why would you buy something without kind of seeing what it's worth, right? I wouldn't want to overpay.
Right.
For $500, you might save $10,000.
That's true.
Maybe. Or you might lose the house. So
it did end up saving my client $15,000.
Yes.
It came
there
down.
You go.
So therefore, that is true, because it got him to come down a little bit.
So I mean, there's good and bad. I mean, look, appraisals are not going away. They're going to be around. So get used to it. But this might be a good step in the right direction if it just helps people get into homes quicker. Okay, so next topic I want to talk about. There's a real estate firm, tech startup. They're creating virtual reality tours of New York City apartments. Basically, they're going into these apartments and just creating these where you literally can put on a VR glass and like look around the home without ever even stepping into the house. Now, I think it works in New York because you get a lot of foreign investors. There's people from out of state buying houses in New York, so I think it opens that up. But, you know, in this age where, and we talk about technology all the time, but in this age where we're moving forward with a lot of technology, if you're not kind of adapting or moving into that type of realm, you might be left behind. So I wanted to open up to you guys, like in the future, will there not be open houses? Could you just put on your glasses and check out a house? I mean, is there any value to show a house? If there's like, I mean, does that hurt the realtor and their value proposition to the client, like showing the homes, or does that help it? And can you find a way to use technology to accentuate what you already do? And Lindsay, maybe you could talk about that and tell us like what you think technology is doing to your profession, and how do you embrace it or do you fight against it?
Oh, I love it.
You love it.
I do.
There we go.
I do. I think obviously with technology, you're changing day by day.
Yeah.
And I don't think open houses will be forever gone.
No?
I think it'll slow down maybe a little bit with this. But showing homes, I mean, you guys all have bought a house. If you didn't walk into that house, do you think you would purchase it?
No.
I personally needed to like look at it.
Right.
You know, I had to like walk it. But the thing is with VR, if it gets good enough.
You could walk. I don't know. I feel like a lot of my clients and just people that I've talked to in the past are like, when I walk into a home, I just know. So therefore,
yeah.
I feel like
I have walked into homes that smell really bad, and I don't think VR is going to pick that up.
No,
right?
I don't think it will.
There's like cat pee in the corner.
I think it just creates a lot of efficiencies, right?
Yeah.
So like, if you're showing, you're sending listings, and someone can go through and take a VR tour,
they're gonna know
and
if they
say,
like it or not.
I don't really like this one. I don't even want to go see it. Instead of showing them that house and driving out there and scheduling a showing time, that's been ruled out. Instead of showing six houses, you're showing two. They took the tour of all six,
yep.
Right?
Yeah, it's a great
tour.
So
yeah, definitely.
I think that those who use technology and leverage it, right, to create efficiencies in their own business, to do more business, will be successful. Those who kind of just, like, fight it, nah, that's garbage. Okay, we'll show 30 houses a night, and let's see how many you actually close.
I agree 100% with that, yes.
There's going to be two sets of professionals in this realm. There are going to be the ones that fight against it and the ones that embrace it. And for anybody listening out there, if you're in any industry, really embrace the technology, because it's not going anywhere, right? We're gonna have technology. I want a robot. Do you want a robot?
Definitely.
I already have one.
You want a robot, right?
For sure.
I want like a robot. Like I come home, like it cooks for me, cleans the house.
That's a big robot.
Yeah. I want him to follow me and carry my stuff.
Just carry your stuff.
Yeah, carry my purse.
I got one of those those vacuum robots, and I was like, this thing's trash. It's garbage.
The Roomba?
There's no way.
No, they're awesome.
I was like, there's no way it could, you know, do a good job.
They're awesome.
Come back, the thing's filled with dust. The floors
phenomenal.
Are spotless.
Yeah.
It like did everything, and I'm like,
I want more. I want more robots.
I need to just
make my life easier.
It's everything. Right?
But somewhere, a housekeeper is pissed that you just said that.
Yeah,
right.
For sure.
So you got to figure out how to adapt, right? So
they need to get Roombas and set them off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go house to house and just set the Roombas
collect
and then pick them up.
And go.
Yeah. Charge you 20 a week.
Yeah. Yeah. Jamie, how are we doing on time? We got a new producer today because Tiffany's out. Jamie, how are we doing on time?
We're at almost 20 minutes.
We got 5 more minutes. We'll handle one more topic. Century 21 Real Estate named former Zillow exec Nick Bailey as CEO president. So Century 21, they have almost 7,500 franchises in 79 countries, about 115,000 sales professionals that work with them. It's a pretty big agency, obviously. They're all over the world. So what does it mean getting the guy from Zillow who basically Zillow is like kind of competing with agents on some level, right? Mm-hmm. They want to, you know, they act like they're working with them, but on the back end, they're looking for ways to sell homes online, kind of make like an eBay of homes or an Amazon of homes, which is weird. So what does it mean that that Nick Bailey moved from Zillow to Century 21? I think this might go back to like embracing technology and them trying to, you know, Century 21 trying to get into like, you know, the future of what it's going to look like to do business.
Right. Kind of looks, sure. Yeah. Kind of looks like that he's trying to like become this, make Century 21 like a Zillow, have their own Zillow. To
right.
It's just them going, getting all those leads from Zillow and no one else.
Right.
In a way.
I don't know. Like, I wonder what this guy's going to do because, look, mm-hmm. the reality is Zillow is a technology platform and he's coming from a technology platform and he's going to a really an older type, Century 21's been around for a while, right? Mm-hmm. They're kind of set in their way. So they're kind of trying to get, in my opinion, into the forefront of technology. We'll see what happens. Well, I'm interested.
He's tapping into a market of 79 countries with 115,000 agents.
That's a lot.
And if he can impart technology onto all of them and give the whole company the mm-hmm. availability to do what Zillow does, could be a game changer for Century 21.
Well, you're seeing all these agencies doing now, right? Keller Williams is doing it. Remax is trying to. I mean, everybody's getting into the technology game because it is the future. And if you don't start moving that way, you're really going to have a hard time surviving in this industry, in my opinion. We got a couple questions from our listening audience. These might be the only three people that listen to us, but they actually sent in some questions. Let's see here. Which one? Diane, why don't you read one of them?
Okay, this is from Nancy in Birmingham. I currently want to move into a new home but cannot seem to find anything worth buying. I don't want to list my home until I find something I like. I feel stuck. What should I do?
Ooh. This is a great question for you. I mean, this
Get
is
it
like,
a lot.
Yeah. So what do you do?
That is a good one. I mean, so if you want to move into a new home, I would definitely keep your eye open on the internet. Look at what's out there. But you want to get your house listed.
Yeah.
Because then I feel like when somebody says that to me, they don't really have the urge to get into a new home until their house is listed because they can't buy it until their house sells, right?
Yes.
Well, yeah, so, I think, you know, a good part for an agent to ask is, well, do you have to sell to buy?
Right, definitely.
And if they don't, well, that frees up a lot of options because they can take their time to sell it afterwards. And from the mortgage standpoint, if you, let's say you put down 10% and close, if you sell your home and pull $200,000 of equity out and put that down on your mortgage, the lender can actually recalculate your payments to bring it down to where it would have been if you put down the full amount from the start.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, this is because I went through this, and I'll tell you my experience. So my wife and I, we were looking at homes online. We were going to move. We couldn't find anything, but like we just kind of we weren't really that serious. Until someone knocked on our door and offered to buy our place, it wasn't on the market, but that place got sold. Now, we did create a contingency where we had 60 days to get out, right? So they gave us some breathing room. But at that moment, it was like, oh my God, we have to find a house. And we did, right? We got real serious. And I don't think there was any way, had we not sold that home, that we would still be looking, I feel like. So you need to have your feet to the fire on some level, right?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, so guys, it was a great show, Lindsay.
Yeah,
you did great.
Thank you for having me,
Diane.
Thanks for coming, Lindsay.
Yes.
Great voice.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, if you guys want to see Diane, she's on our website, David Hall Mortgage. Don't be creepy about it. So Sal got a haircut from last week.
Thanks.
Looks great, Sal.
It's called feedback.
Sal,
I took some from Paul. He said my hair looked like good.
You look shaggy, brother. You look kind of shaggy, but I love you just the same.
Yeah, you're looking kind of puffy.
Puffy?
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I've lost weight.
Okay.
What do you mean?
Just saying, I don't know.
I'm puffy.
Yeah.
You're calling me puffy?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what happened.
We're out. Bye, everyone. Bye. Have a great day.
Have a good day.